Hello, this is the New Books Network. I'm Natalia Shpilova-Said, one of the hosts on the Literary Studies channel. My guest today is Emily Petermann, Assistant Professor of American Literature at the University of Constance, Germany. And today we're discussing her book, The Musical Novel, Imitation of Musical Structure, Performance, and Reception in Contemporary Fiction, which was first published in 2014 by Boydell and Brewer, but a new edition has already come out. Emily with Boydell and Brewer published a paperback edition of this book. Well, congratulations, Emily, and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we discuss your book, do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am, as you said, I'm currently assistant professor of American literature at the University of Constance here in Germany. At the moment, I'm a research fellow at our Institute for Advanced Study, but I previously taught both in Constance and before that in Göttingen. My PhD is from the University of Constance, which I earned in 2012, and I've also studied at Wellesley College in Massachusetts and at Yale University. Not sure what else you'd like to know.
What are your current research interests?
Of course, as you can tell from the topic of my book, mm-hmm. I'm very much interested and active in word and music studies, but I've also worked on Gothic literature, film musicals, and my most recent projects have been related to nonsense literature.
So would you tell us a little bit about this project, the musical novel? How did it evolve? And I guess it's somehow connected with your musical background?
Yes. I have always been interested in music, though I never studied it in a formal sense. My degrees are in literature and linguistics rather than in music. But in a seminar on Aldous Huxley several years ago, I worked on the project of musicalizing fiction that he outlines in his novel Point Counterpoint. And that got me interested in how texts can engage with music. And so I began to look at other novels that do something similar to that. And that led me to develop a theory of how novels can imitate musical structures, which became my dissertation and then eventually this book.
Well, I think your background is very interesting, especially in terms of this project that involves both literature and music. You mentioned that one of areas of your expertise is linguistics as well. Mm-hmm. And linguistics, well, of course, means some language studies, and language is somehow affiliated with sound. So I believe this kind of combination was quite helpful.
Sure. And I think that my linguistics background is especially visible in the kinds of theoretical approaches I took to this topic. I use semiotics quite a bit in my analyses. And so you can really see this focus on structures as growing out of my linguistics background, I think. Although I've supplemented that with a focus on the role of the reader, which I think goes a little bit beyond that initial structuralist take on things.
Yeah, that was something that I was curious about. So your project emerges on the borders of various disciplines. The music and literature collaboration is the most obvious. So how do you define the overlapping of different fields?
This definitely is an interdisciplinary project because I'm looking at how the literary form can relate to a neighboring art form, that of music. And so I guess it's, in a way, there's a parallel between what these novels do in drawing on music and what I do with my own project, in that the text remains a work of literature even as it explores musical form. And my study remains firmly located in literary studies and literary analysis, even as it is drawing on musicological theory and study in that field. It still remains a work of literature, though. And I've been very, very much aware of my own limitations when it comes to dealing with musicological terms and so forth, since that's not my formal training. But I made an effort to define terms carefully and to avoid the kind of impressionism you sometimes see in literary study that deals with the neighboring arts. But what's really helped me with this interdisciplinarity is that I'm very active in the field of word and music studies, which really is an interdisciplinary community that incorporates both, that includes both musicologists and literary scholars. And for example, I'm in a research network now called Americana, which studies aesthetics, performance, and authenticity of American popular music. And that also draws on half musicologist and half American studies, cultural studies and literature people, so that we can really learn from each other about how neighboring fields might view the same phenomena.
Well, yeah. Well, your book is very detailed in terms of describing not only theoretical points, but musical terms as well. And you approach that area very carefully. And that was something that I appreciated when reading the book. So will you tell us a little bit about your book? What books, what texts did you choose for the analysis, and why you chose those books in particular?
Okay, well, my main focus was, from the beginning, was on texts that imitate musical forms and not just dealing with music on the level of content. So my first question in approaching potential texts for analysis was, is there really a pervasive imitation of music in this novel? And then there were many more than those I was able to deal with. So I decided to further narrow it down by looking at particular types of music that were imitated in the text. So I have two groups that serve as sort of case studies of how a text can imitate music. I have texts that are based on jazz and texts that are based on the structures of Bach's Goldberg variations, which allows me to compare novels dealing with a whole genre of music, the jazz novels, and those dealing with a specific piece, in the case of the Goldberg texts. At the same time, it also allows me to contrast a 20th century popular art form and an 18th century European classical music tradition. So I think while this is not representative of the entire body of musical novels out there, it does give me a rather a diverse enough field in order to make some claims about the ways that texts deal with music in general.
So what are the main differences and similarities between the perception of a musical text and a literary text?
Well, I think the most obvious is probably that we perceive a text as a written object, printed on the page generally, whereas music is perceived as an auditory or acoustic phenomenon. We don't tend to think of the musical notation as being the music itself, but rather the performance is what is really the music itself. And literature may, of course, also be performed, obviously, in the case of drama or poetry readings, or even the silent performance of a text in the reader's mind. But we still tend to think of the printed page as being the text. So that is a bit of a difference in the way we approach these two media. But in terms of similarities, they both have this tension between a fixed version, some kind of notation, and a version that only emerges in interaction with the recipient. But the dynamic is different, since the reader has a different degree of control over the reading of a text than a listener does with regard to a piece of music. And of course, they both unfold in time, making them temporal rather than primarily spatial arts, in contrast to, say, the visual arts, which tend to be more spatial in nature.
And what about time? I believe you mentioned somewhere in your book that time also somehow shapes the perception of the literary texts and musical texts. The fact that with a musical text, it's some immediate experience, and with the literary texts, it's some it's an immediate experience as well. But still, it can somehow be more flexible in terms of time negotiations.
I think so. For example, the way I have to qualify this a bit, because we approach different pieces of music or different musical contexts in different ways. It's a big difference whether I'm hearing a performance in a concert hall or whether I'm listening to a CD that I can stop and start again at my own leisure. But generally, when we listen to a piece of music, it continues at its own pace, and I, as a listener, don't usually have direct control over that pacing, although, again, there is some variation there. But with the text, of course, I can stop. I can put it down and continue reading at another time. So there is a difference there. I might choose to skim rather than read very attentively, which will change the pacing and so forth. But I also looked at time in connection with the kind of time that's implied by different musical forms in these texts. And I found that the texts tended to think about time as cyclical or circular in some way because of the musical forms that they were using as models, especially the theme and variations form in the case of the Goldberg novels, that this theme and variations pattern, and especially with Bach's return to the aria da capo at the end of the piece, suggests circularity, that this cycle could start again at the beginning and continue. And these novels tend to reflect on that quite a bit in terms of references to the calendar and other cycles that play an important role in these novels.
So would you give us some sense of those books that you included for this analysis? Just maybe a couple of names of those books, just for us to have some understanding how you approach this text. Because, well, your book is divided into a couple of segments where you concentrate either on structural elements in terms of the analysis of the musical and the fictional or literary, and on the content level. And those segments are separate. When I started reading your book, I was envisioning something like Kerouac's On the Road, but you mentioned it briefly. I was intrigued by this kind of selection that you offer. Mm-hmm.
Sure. As I said, the main principle was that I was looking for novels that were really extensively using musical forms in their structure throughout the text. So I did look at On the Road by Kerouac, which people have considered a jazz novel, but I didn't get the impression that it was really using jazz structures on an extensive level, although one could apply this model to analyzing that novel as well. Some of the ones that I did include are Toni Morrison's Jazz, or Zam Wilson Cartier's novels Bebop Rebop and from 1987 and Muse Echo Blues from 1991, Stanley Crouch's Don't the Moon Look Lonesome from 2000, or a series of novels by Albert Murray beginning with Train Whistle Guitar in 1975. And going all the way up until The Magic Keys in 2005. So there were a total of 11 novels I had all together. 11 jazz novels. And then I also had several based on the Goldberg Variations, five novels by Nancy Huston, Thomas Bernhardt, Richard Powers, Rachel Cusk, and Gabriel Giuseppovici. But again, I decided to use the piece of music that was imitated and the extent of the structural imitation as a selection criterion in choosing which novels to include. But certainly there are many others that would fit in here as well. And I hope that this model is one that can be applied to the analysis of other texts beyond this fairly small selection.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a musician, and it's quite easy for me to follow, for example, some content borrowings from music into literature. Mm-hmm. But on the structural level, I don't think that I will be competent enough to speak about that. Do you believe that these structural imitations are intentional, or how does this kind of collaboration between musical borrowings on a structural level work with textual, like literary fragments?
Mm-hmm. That is a potential criticism of this kind of analysis, is that you could say that I'm overinterpreting these kinds of structural forms into the text. I think in these cases, though, if you look at them closely, it's fairly clear that this is too extensive to be a coincidence in terms of the parallels between musical forms and the way that the texts are structured. And especially the thematization of music, the fact that music is so pervasive on the level of content in most of these texts, points the reader's attention towards these musical forms and encourages us to look for those parallels. So, for example, the jazz novels all involve jazz on some level in the content of the music, the content of the text. In the Goldberg novels, there is really all of them also have music at least some level, and they very often have very explicit references to the particular piece of music that's involved. So of the Goldberg novels, three of them have the word Goldberg or a variant mm-hmm. of it in the title, and it's not a coincidental similarity between these. And there are many different types of structures that the text can imitate too, and I chose to structure my model in such a way as to consider different levels of music and different types of elements that can be involved, that can be imitated by text, and then to consider what textual strategies or devices are used in order to imitate those features. So it can range from elements of sound, such as rhythm and timbre, through various kinds of structures, microstructural or macrostructural features, from such as riffs, call and response, structure of an album, theme and variations, numerical patterns, and so forth. And then elements of the performance situation, whether that's improvisation, audience interaction or responses, or even the mediality of a particular recording that is that plays a role in the text. So we can compare this on a more differentiated in a more differentiated way.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question about this improvisation idea. So when musicians improvise, right, there is no editing, especially if it's a live performance. But in terms of writing a book, even if you improvise, there is probably some sort of editing afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Sure. In the case of a novel, these texts are not really improvised. They are fixed. They are. Right. There's no reason to believe that they have not been edited before being published in this form. So this is an attempt to imitate improvisation. It is not actually reproducing the strategy of or the technique of improvisation. So to some extent, these musical structures in the text are really just analogies, or it's a metaphor that they are using. On the other hand, they do this because they are trying to create a similar effect to the improvised performance. So texts that are interested in improvisation will try to create a distinctive narrative voice that gives readers the impression that they are making up the story as they go along, and that the story can change as it develops rather than being predetermined and set in advance. Of course, that's not actually the case, but that is the impression that they evoke through these kinds of narrative strategies.
Your book offers a very detailed analysis of those borrowings, which are somehow connected with Bach's Goldberg variations. How do you interpret this kind of interest to this particular work, and of course the richness of the Bach's work in general?
Well, the Goldberg variations are a really interesting case in musical fiction, precisely because no other piece has been imitated to the same extent. I've found these five novels that I analyzed, but also several others that it figures in prominently to differing degrees, at least one drama, a radio play, even an X-Files episode. So the Goldberg variations, there's something about them that really interests writers, that strikes a chord. And I think to some extent it's probably the appeal of the theme and variations as a form that is relatively easy to translate into text in comparison to some others. If you were focusing on harmonies, for example, it would be a little bit harder to find a textual parallel. But the theme and variations is a pattern that or a structure that I think works pretty well in text. But interestingly, there are many other themes and variations in music that have not had the same resonance. I think that to some extent, it's also because of the mathematical nature of this particular piece, that it is so regular in its patterns that it has, for example, every third variation is a canon at increasing intervals throughout the 30 variations. So you have this great mathematical regularity, which is an interesting constraint for a writer to set themselves then, modeling this on Bach's work and saying, okay, if I have very rigid constraints, how can I express my creativity within that constraint? And that ends up being a theme that a lot of these texts reflect on quite explicitly, is how creativity and structure, chaos and order, how they might work together, and how an artist can express themselves within such constraints. And although that's not restricted to the novels based on the Goldberg variations, you find very similar thematic concerns in some of the jazz novels, where they think about an innovative jazz musician character as also struggling with the tension between chaos and creativity, order and freedom. In, for example, Michael Ondaatje's Coming Through Slaughter, or Jack Fuller's The Best of Jackson Pain, which both deal with jazz musicians, and it shows them as being struggling with this precise tension.
Would you say that there are some patterns for imitating some certain musical works, depending on what time period writers write? So in other words, do music elements incorporated into literary texts vary depending on the time period and style preferences?
Oh, okay. Well, my study didn't focus specifically on a historical perspective, mm-hmm. but it does make sense to assume that texts from a different period or from different periods will have different interests or different styles, or perhaps be interested in different kinds of music, or put that music to different uses. Mm-hmm. One aspect that I've noticed is that there are really two distinct poles when it comes to understandings of music, either a very romantic conception of music as transcendent, you have the romantic genius archetype and so forth, in contrast with the very formalist approach to music, where music is structures and internal intrinsic references and no referent outside itself and so forth. So these different ideas of musical meaning have shifted historically and are more or less associated with different periods, but they also coexist. You really can see both tendencies, even within these texts that I've looked at, from within a 30 to 40 year period. So there some periods will have more of a focus on a romantic conception of music, and others more on a formalist conception of music. But they do overlap and coexist as well.
Mm-hmm. So you already touched a little bit upon jazz borrowings, but I would like to ask you this question about jazz and writing in general. Do you believe that writing in general can be compared to jazz performance, for example?
I guess it depends on what you mean by that, or in what way. These writers, or these texts at least, do present the writing of a novel or the writing of a biography as being somehow in parallel to jazz performances and jazz composition in performance, especially in texts like Ondaatje's Coming Through Slaughter and Fuller's The Best of Jackson Pain, in which you have this explicit paralleling of the musician figure and the writer figure. So we have, in The Best of Jackson Pain, you have a musicologist who is trying to write a biography of the fictional jazz musician Jackson Pain, and we hear him talking about the music and talking about the process of writing the book at the same time, so that we see these two as being similar. And this kind of meta-reference, this meta-fictional quality, is something that really all the musical novels I've seen share, that by reflecting on how music works, or what the musician is like, or how music is structured and ordered, it allows for a self-reflection of how the text works and what the writer's task is and how the reader engages with the text. You get this kind of meta-reference that is provoked by the intermedial quality of these texts. So in that sense, certainly jazz is held up as a model for writing in these texts. But the same is also true of the Goldberg variations in those novels.
So when we read a novel with this idea in mind that a novel can somehow include some musical structures or include some musical content, it really gives some additional dimensions for interpreting texts in general. So how does intermediality, in your opinion, change the way we read and the way we listen to music?
Well, really, this is the kind of self-reflection, the meta-referential reflection that is provoked by the intermedial aspects of the text. So by foregrounding its structures by doing unexpected things. For example, some of these texts are quite experimental in their attempt to imitate and reproduce musical structures. That causes the reader to sort of pause and reflect on what is so unexpected about this text? How do texts work in more generally? And so you get this meta-reference, this reflection on what the text itself can do that the intermedial qualities of the text really provoke in the reading experience. You also see that, though, with other media. So texts that imitate painting, for example, will also often have these kinds of parallels between the arts on a content and thematic level that is also related to the fact that they're imitating another art form.
So did you have a chance to teach these musical novels?
Yeah, actually, I've gotten to teach some of them a few times now in undergraduate seminars, which poses interesting challenges, actually. Mm-hmm. I found that some of these texts strike students as really very difficult to deal with. Some are, as I said, rather experimental or fragmentary, and beginning students might struggle with that. I'm also teaching primarily non-native speakers in my mm-hmm. classes and beginning students, so I've had to be kind of selective about which texts to introduce in the classroom. I had very good results with Toni Morrison's Jazz, but they struggled a bit more with Ondaatje's Coming Through Slaughter, for example. But I found that it was also a really good opportunity to introduce students to music that they were not familiar right. with. My students don't bring any jazz background with them to the classroom, and so I've tried to introduce a course of guided listenings to accompany our readings so that they can sort of go back and forth between the texts and the music that the texts are dealing with, and so have a multimedial experience of this art.
Would you give some tips on how to teach this musical novel? So do you bring some music into class, and do those discussions include some comparative work between, well, of course, literary texts and musical texts? Mm-hmm. And if students don't have any musical background, how can we facilitate that kind of conversation?
That really is a challenge, and it does take extra time, because I have brought in music in the classroom, and so I have to leave time for the listenings. I can't just assume that they know what blues form is or that they know what a riff is, but I have to play them a couple of examples and point out the particular structures that are relevant for the text we're looking at, leave extra time for them to explore this and discuss it. But with some of the more obvious cases, that has worked quite well. I've had somewhat better results actually dealing with blues and jazz poetry than with these prose texts. But the prose texts, the discussion tends to slip relatively quickly into plot analysis and characterization mm-hmm. and things like that, rather than focusing on the structures. They're more used to looking at structures in poetry, so I've found that they're a little bit more receptive to that. But you can do it with novels too.
What poetry works were you including into your readings?
Oh, there's a lot of great blues and jazz poetry by Langston Hughes, for example. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of really excellent anthologies of blues and jazz poems too, although I'm afraid I don't have the titles off the top of the top of my head. Yeah, there is really a lot of good material to work with there if you start looking a bit.
Are your current projects connected with this kind of work, comparative work between literature and music?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I'll start with the no part, because that's a little bit easier to answer. The German academic system is actually such that the second major research project has to be something completely different from the first, which is quite different from in the United States or in England or other countries, where you build upon your research more directly. So I had to look for something that was not musical fiction, that was quite different. And I ended up starting to work on nonsense poetry in order to have a shift of genre, and I'm also considering a longer historical period going back into the 19th century. But in some ways, this is actually still related, because I've noticed that one of the things I'm interested in nonsense is how It is a particularly poetic mode that draws attention to form more than content of any given message, and it engages in a particular kind of play with the reader's expectations of how texts make sense. So we have a tension between a suggestion of sense or even multiple senses and an impression that it doesn't make sense at all. So this tension is part of how nonsense works. And I think that the more experimental musical novels do something similar, that they also are foregrounding form over content and challenging the reader's ability to interpret and make sense of what they read. They have to recognize a certain pattern in order to make sense of unexpected forms. So I guess to some extent, nonsense is perhaps just a more extreme tendency than is already in musical fiction.
Well, is nonsense some sort of a variation of absurd?
Mm-hmm. It's related to the absurd, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And and you're looking into the differences or some developments or...
Oh, well, at one point I thought I was going to do a very, very large project on nonsense. It's since gotten a bit smaller, but I was initially very interested in looking at how nonsense is related to surrealism, mm-hmm. to the absurd, and that there are similar tendencies, similar strategies for undermining our conventional sense-making approaches in each of these cases, but that they're put, of course, to very different functions, different uses, and also addressed to different audiences. You tend to think of a child audience when it comes to nonsense literature, although that's not always the case. But then you also have these avant-garde forms like Dada and Surrealism, which are clearly not children's literature. So you have very different contexts. But that there are similar aspects of undermining our sense making as readers. But I've had to narrow it down a bit because it was too broad to be manageable. So I'm focusing now really on American nonsense literature proper. But I am still interested in how that relates to surrealism and to the absurd.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that this nonsense element can also be incorporated into the analysis of musical novels. And I was thinking about those books that you chose for the analysis. And of course, they're all contemporary. And I'm wondering if some musical borrowing, some musical in terms of the structure, for example, can be found in the literature of the 19th century, let's say. Or are these borrowings structural are more relevant for the contemporary level, where we talk about some postmodern literature and where we talk about some interdisciplinary connections and like collaborations. Although I think we can also find those elements in the literature of the 19th century. So did you have a chance to look at those works from the past, so to speak?
Well, I think that... you're right that we can find precursors of this quite a bit earlier than the text that I looked at in this study. Certainly, the period of modernism offers many other examples. James Joyce has been compared with this, and as I said, Aldous Huxley was my starting point in looking at musical fiction. I don't think you'll find very much going back into the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that this kind of focus on structure is something that really emerges more with the modern period. Mm-hmm. And if you go back into, say, Romanticism, you'll have a different idea of music. Mm-hmm. But you do find writers very much interested in music throughout the 19th century. But they do something different with it that's not so much an imitation of form, but holding up music more as an ineffable ideal. You get statements like, writers, all art aspires to the condition of music, for example. This idea that music goes beyond the kind of meaning we find in other more concrete arts. That's something that the 19th century is very much interested in. You do find structural imitation to some extent in the works of E.T.A. Hoffmann, but I don't think that there's nearly as much of that kind of structural imitation until you get into about the modernist period.
So it's more about this kind of breaking the rules and breaking the conventions, which are more relevant for the 20th century rather than for the 19th century. But there are all those violations of rules and conventions in the 19th century as well. So
I just think the aspects of music that writers are interested in are somewhat different, and so you don't get the same kind of formal experimentation in earlier periods.
Yeah,
No, I don't want to overgeneralize, though, because these are rather broad, sweeping remarks about entire periods. I wouldn't want to pin it down quite that much.
So I was thinking about Tolstoy's The Kreutzer Sonata, and of course, in terms of the content material, there are a lot of probably allusions and some overlappings, but in terms of the structure, so maybe, but like I said, I'm not a musician, so I'm not competent to speak about that.
Well, the Kreutzer Sonata is often held up as an example of musical fiction or an earlier case of this kind of thing. Except if you look at it closely, it really is important in terms of content analogies and plays a role in the plot of the story, but it is not actually sonata form. Mm-hmm. If the story had been written structured around a sonata, it would be a very different text than what we actually have. So it's really not a good example of structural imitation, although it is definitely a case that shows that the 19th century was already very much interested in music.
Well, thank you so much, Emily, for this very inspiring and fascinating conversation, and good luck with all your current projects.
Thank you very much.